We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Conceive, believe, achieve. Shut the f*** up.
And new undisputed UFC middleweight champion of the world, Michael the Count Bisping.
This is Believe You Me on the Gas Digital Network.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode. Believe you me, 300 and something. Luis J. Gomez pulling your face already. What's up?
I don't know, man. I'm just, you look good. You look good. You seem happy.
I'm happy.
You seem very happy. Everything, whatever's going on, your Instagram, your life seems very happy. You're happy being a family man, being retired from fighting. So living the good life.
Fishing with the kid. Didn't catch anything. Spent a long time on Twitter, actually, last night, going to war with somebody that was talking shit about Lucas, because I put a little video on, and he's like, oh, God, you should be embarrassed.
You should be embarrassed.
Your son's 10 years old and can't even throw a cast. I'm like, you fucking prick. I mean, what is your problem? You know what I mean? Why would you do that?
Is it 1920? Who fishes?
Nobody, unless you're a weirdo, right? Okay? It's like,
this guy can't even catch an alligator with his bare hands.
God damn. I mean, I can't remember the last time I saw someone so stupid. and then actually this was kind of interesting. Somebody on Twitter last night said, so what, you just ignore all the positive comments and then you respond to the negative? I said, yeah, unfortunately, that is the shitty thing about social media, or one of the shitty things, because negativity, for some reason, you are attracted to negativity. And certainly when that negativity is directed to one's child, yeah. All the other people that say positive, I'll give you a like, but I can't respond to everything. But that little shit, you want to go after my son? Nah, man. Nah, I ain't going to fucking take that, Lewis. Ain't going to take that.
That's the only thing I block people for on Instagram is just dumb jokes about my kid. And it's not even because I can't take it. It's like I have family members who are not, they have nothing to do with the comedy or podcasting business. They don't get why it's funny to make an off-color joke about somebody's fucking kid. So, yeah, I saw that. And I saw you going back and forth with the guy. It was fairly innocent on both of your ends, to be honest with you. But he should also think twice before he makes a comment about somebody's kid, especially a professional fighter's kid.
Yeah. So, and especially if it was Callum as well, because Callum will, you know, regardless of what you think of him, he would fuck you up and he'll fuck up that guy on Twitter.
I don't think anything negative of Callum. I hate the narrative that you put out that I have no respect for Callum.
Zero. Listen, don't try and backtrack now, Lewis. We all know what's going on.
I still think I'd box him up, but look, it's a different conversation. We'll move on.
Hey, listen, I heard you when I logged in a moment ago. Ladies and gentlemen, listen to it. I log in, it comes on, and that Lewis is just going on and on and on about Harrington. You have no idea what I could do to you. I would penetrate you. I can do anything. I'm like, Lewis, everything you're saying applies to me, to you. Yes. You know what I mean?
It's but the I caught myself. Life. Did you hear that? You're different, though. You're a professional fighter. Me and Harrington are just two fat middle-aged men.
Correct.
We're all things considered, all things even. So this is like a fighter saying this to another fighter, being like, Bisping, I can just fucking beat you in any area and just whatever I want to do with you. That's the point I was making to Harrington, because Harrington trains. He trained today and we did jiu-jitsu as well.
Harrington doesn't train. He's dabbled in a few months. When someone goes, yeah, bro, I train, man, that means like they have done MMA, jiu-jitsu, wrestling, whatever, their entire life. It's part of who they are. It's part of their being, right? You get, and both of you, you're dabbling. You're playing around. It's great. I love it. It brings color to the podcast. You understand it more. It's awesome. But at no point can you proclaim to train. You dabble. Let me tell you this last point. You know what the saying is in martial arts?
What?
And I saw you talking shit about someone being a white belt. I'm like, Lewis, you're a white belt.
Who? Who did I talk shit about being a white belt?
I don't know. I saw you saying, oh, yeah, this guy's a white belt. I'm like, you're a white belt. No, in martial arts,
what are you talking about?
The saying goes in martial arts.
He's just making things up. I need to point this out. He just says these things.
The saying goes in martial arts, you only really start learning when you get your black belt. When you get your black belt, then you know, because now you understand the fundamentals behind it, the reasoning, the positions, and all that type of thing. So please stop with the talk.
Devil's advocate.
Devil's avocado.
You only have your brown belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
Black belt in Japanese jiu-jitsu since I was 15, motherfucker.
Yeah, but you're 15. What could 15-year-old Michael Bisping do to 39 or 41-year-old Michael Bisping?
Beat the fuck out of 38-year-old Lewis.
Probably. Yes.
Undefeated,
I'll give you that.
Boy.
I'll give you that.
Undefeated. How was your weekend, Lewis? What'd you get up to?
It was good, man. I hung out with my girlfriend. We did a Zoom. She's Jewish, so we did a Zoom Passover Seder, which was very.
What does that involve?
I don't know, disparaging Jesus, not respecting my upbringing and my religion, my
don't
beliefs.
Like that at all.
No, it was kind of fun. It was a pretty unique experience. So you prepare a dinner and you sort of tell a story with dinner and the different foods that you have, and they're very symbolic, and it was cool for my son. He's very into history and culture, and so it was long though. It was 3 hours. Fucking.
Sounds like a process. Sounds like a process. It's like, okay, I'm starving. Can we just get to dessert, please? Jesus Christ. No wonder the guy's dead. He starved to death. What did I do? Went fishing. Watched the fights. The fights were sensational. Oh, my God. Francis Ngannou. Got up. I did a pre-show for ESPN and BT Sport duties all day. So I was very, very busy. And then because it was pay-per-view, I don't know. The fights start so early these days, but on Saturday night, I feel like I was sitting around forever waiting for the fights to start. I was so bored because, as I said, I had obligations, so I couldn't leave and do anything else. And I was just sitting in the house. Rebecca's off playing with a horse, Lucas is with his mates, and I'm sitting there like Billy No Mates on the couch watching fucking cricket or some shit. I was bored out of my mind.
I wish I was on the West Coast. It starts at 10 o'clock here, the main card. It's really late, dude. Sometimes I am just dead fucking tired. And that's this Saturday night. I was so beat when the card started. I was like, holy shit, dude. And then I got really into it when Woodley and Luque started. I just, whatever happened, my adrenaline kicked in. And then the heavyweight title fight started. And then it was like pure adrenaline. There was something very special about that fight. I don't know what it was, but it just sent sparks into the air, and then everybody in my house was fucking on their feet, very, very excited.
No, I was the same way. Of course, the first two fights in the main card, they were great fights, but they weren't, there wasn't ones that I'm itching to see and really, really curious. I was excited for them, and I'm sure, and they did deliver. Jamie Mullarkey, what a great knockout he had in the first round. Sensational. And then Miranda Maverick, probably not a name that is overly familiar to a lot of people, but Miranda Maverick, my God, she's a really, really good addition to the roster there. I mean, I think that's her second fight in the UFC. She beat Jillian Robertson, looked sensational, good grappling, aggressive striking, 23 years old. I think she's going to do big things. But you're right, when it got to those, once O'Malley came on, then it's weird. I was saying to Rebecca, I said, I'm sitting here, I've got fucking butterflies in my stomach. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because you still get, really, really emotionally invested in it. And those three definitely delivered. In fact, should we just get into the fights and see where we go?
Let's get into it, my friend. Very exciting. Overall, I mean, very exciting. Start to finish. Honestly, there wasn't a non-exciting fight on the main card. Do you want to start with at the top and go down, or you want to start with O'Malley?
Ooh.
I say work up. I said start with O'Malley and work our way up.
All right. Well, Thomas Almeida lost 4 out of his last 5, unfortunately, but still a tough fighter. I think I talked about it last time. Some of the people that he lost to were still good guys. And he showed up, made it to the third round. But let's be honest, it was all Sugar Sean O'Malley. It was his night. He was in charge of that fight from start to finish. He looked absolutely sensational. It was a really good showcase performance for him. The shot selection, the speed, the technique, the elusive footwork when he needed it. The only criticism, and it's not even really a criticism, is that he needs to stop trying to be so cool. Do you know what I mean? Because he tried twice, I think it was, for the walk-off knockout, certainly in the first round. If he just followed that up, like fucking Ngannou did on Stipe. I was like, when Stipe went down and then Ngannou came, I'm like, Herb Dean, get there faster. Stipe's going to die. But we'll get to that later. But when O'Malley, if he just followed it up, he could have got that first round finish. But still, on the flip side to that, it was actually very valuable for him. as we were talking about with Ngannou, more time in the octagon, more experience. Just the more time you spend in there, the better it is. It becomes more at home. But that doesn't matter because O'Malley, he just dominated it from start to finish. He looked sensational.
Yeah, I mean, Almeida had a couple moments, you know, throughout the whole fight, maybe two or three little moments. There was once where O'Malley slipped, and didn't really take advantage of that the way that he should have. But yeah, overall, I mean, there was a massive speed and technique advantage with O'Malley. He was just sort of playing with him. It looked like a guy who was, you know, head and shoulders above him in the striking department, and a lot more athletic as well, which I think played into a big part of how he was able to move and just sort of take control. But it was just very obvious there was a massive difference there. You know, my only criticism of O'Malley at this point is I think they got to sort of have him step up. How much hype is this guy going to get until he fights a guy that's in the top 10?
Well, that's exactly what I said last week. It's what I said on BT Sport and ESPN. And probably
I must have been listening.
Any other outlet? No. Harrington, do me a favor. While we're talking, can you just look up the height and reach discrepancy between Almeida and O'Malley? Because you're right. You know, I mean, he had everything going in his favor. Almeida, what he had to do was to get on the inside. Anytime you're fighting somebody tall like that with a long reach, you've got to get on the inside. You've got to use feints. You've got to draw out the attack of O'Malley. Obviously, I've talked about this a lot. And then when you throw the shot that doesn't miss as they're bringing that punch back, that's when you close the distance with head movement and footwork. He's got to get on the inside. And he never really went for it because it's easier said than done. It's easy for me to sit here in my chair and say, you got to get on the inside, bro. You got to get on the inside. What are you doing? The problem is every time you try and get on the inside, you know, you've got somebody like O'Malley picking you apart. The front kicks to the midsection were awesome. They were keeping Almeida at bay. Just everything. It was a great performance. But as you said, it's time now. It's time. I mean, 4 years in the UFC since the contender in 2017. And then now, you know, his last fight was against Chito Vera, unsuccessful. Before that, Eddie Wineland, no disrespect to Eddie Wineland. He was a tremendous fighter back in the day. But, you know, best days behind him. That's a given. Thomas Almeida, tremendous fighter again back in the day. But lost 4 out of his last 5. Now he's lost 5 out of his last 6. It is time for O'Malley now to step up. Okay, and I know Cody Garbrandt's out there Saturday night. Chael Sonnen, when we were doing the post-fight show, Dominic Cruz texted Chael Sonnen and said, "I want that fight." Dominic Cruz wants Sean O'Malley. Fight. Yeah, Dominic Cruz versus Sean O'Malley, both coming off wins, right? O'Malley, 4 years in the octagon, former champion. That'd be a tremendous fight, and I think it's a logical matchup. Also, for Cruz, very tough nut to crack, good wrestler, elusive footwork, very, very fast. The best IQ in the business. If you believe what everyone says.
What's the height difference between Cruz and O'Malley? I want to see that. That has to be much more so than Almeida and O'Malley. You know, I hear you give Cruz some credit. Where did this guy come from? Where did Dominic, I'll fight anybody, anywhere, anytime fucking come from? And I know, look, he had a lot of injuries and had a lot of time off. But the fact that he's fighting these young killers is pretty impressive because he's almost like you. Dominic Cruz is like a dude who you figure he's in the twilight of his career. I don't know that he is.
100. No. He is. Let's be honest. And that's not a disrespectful thing to say. The reality is I'm not sure how old Dominic is. If you could look that up as well, please. But Dominic, I think he's 37 or 38. I could be wrong. For a fucking bantamweight, that's old. 36, Harrington. Thank you. But yeah, I mean, yeah, no, he's in the twilight of his career. He's been around for a long time.
You would just assume that he would only want those, you know, big top 5 names, always be a fight or two away from a title fight. You know, he is essentially giving the opportunity to Sean O'Malley to jump up and to make a name off of him.
Yeah, but it's the perfect scenario. I mean, Dominic Cruz is a smart guy and he is a smart fighter, and that is a smart matchup. Sean O'Malley has a tremendous amount of hype right now. Probably more hype than the champion. More people are probably talking about Sean O'Malley than Piotr Jan. Oh, sorry, Aljamain Sterling, pardon me. But you know what I'm saying? So for Cruz, he's looking at O'Malley and he probably sees a way to beat him. You know, he's a smart guy. He sees the length. He sees the height. He's got decent jiu-jitsu. He's got good striking. But have we seen any wrestling? I don't think we have. And Dominic Cruz could slip, get on the inside, get a takedown, and probably have his way. And for Cruz to go out there and beat someone like O'Malley, he just beat Casey Kenny. Now he's on a 2-fight win streak. And then, oh, guess what? I am in the twilight of my career. I am a future Hall of Famer. So guess what? Please, Dana, not please, Dana, but Dana, come on, give me my fucking title fight, bro, because I deserve it. If nothing more for tenure with the company. And we do see that if they deserve it and they're long enough and they've got that kind of standing. So it's a smart play for Dominic Cruz, I think.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm excited as we're talking about it. I didn't even consider Dominic Cruz being the next fight for Sean O'Malley. What are the rankings for Dominic Cruz and Sean O'Malley? Sean O'Malley's not even in the top 15, I don't believe, right?
I don't believe he was ranked. He maybe will be after Saturday night, but Almeida wasn't ranked, I don't believe either. I just looked that up, Harrington. But Almeida wasn't ranked, so therefore, he probably won't be in the rankings. And this is what I'm talking about. 4 years in the company with, in his mind, undefeated, but with one defeat, he should be fighting that caliber of fighter. We've had the progression. We've had the developmental phase. You know, now it's time to put up or shut up.
The only thing I'd like to see, just because of the shit talk, and I think there is a little bit of an asterisk and there's a little bit of a question mark out there about the fight, is the rematch with Chito Vera. I think they asked Dana White about that in the post-fight press conference, and he said essentially that fight is always sitting there, which is true. Those guys could always meet any time in their career. But that fight does excite me because those guys really do have bad blood. And Chito, honestly, is a pretty big name, you know, especially considering with that win. That win almost propelled Chito Vera into being a bigger name, and I feel like Sean could, you know, try to take that win back. But either way, if you're Sean O'Malley, you want to take the Dominic Cruz fight, or do you? I mean, look, does he maybe want to come along and fight lower-ranked guys and get more experience under his belt?
Well, not really, because unfortunately, I'm not sure what Chito was ranked. I think he might be 15th or 14th, but these guys can still beat you. And if you want to be the champion, you want to try and leapfrog, piggyback, jump over, just fucking ignore anyone, use whatever word you use, but you want to take out the big dogs now. You know what I'm saying? And the more times, the longer it takes you to fight your way through the rankings, all right, granted, if you're that good, you'll beat them all. But still, it's mixed martial arts. There's always things that are going to cause a hiccup. Dominic Cruz is ranked number 9. I think that's a really, really good progression. A former champion, name brand recognition, and a tough fight. You know, O'Malley can win that fight. He's got the striking advantage. Dominic Cruz can win the fight. He's for sure got the wrestling advantage. But will that be enough? And who would prevail? So there's a great storyline there. And I think, yeah, I think that's tremendous matchmaking, even though Dominic Cruz suggested it himself.
Yeah, there's a lot of these changing in the guards fights happening. You know, we'll talk about it in a minute, obviously, with Tyron Woodley and Luque. You know, we saw that happen. But I like the idea of this fight. You know, we'll see what happens. I think the UFC, I've never seen the UFC give somebody so much hype and not try to push him toward a title much more quickly. It's interesting to me that they're taking their time with Sean O'Malley the way they are.
Well, that's what used to happen. I don't necessarily mean the UFC forced people to do it, but you generally, there was a quicker progression to those kind of fights. But I think now, and I agree with it, I think it's the correct thing to do. Obviously, they've got a much larger roster these days, 500 and something people on the roster. So therefore, you know, you can work your way up because you don't want to come along too fast. But O'Malley, 4 years, it is time. I think that's a great matchup. We'll wait and see what happens. All right, let's just take a quick second to hear from Premier Fight Picks, who is run by Bardia Helmi from Premier Fight Picks. He's a top MMA handicapper and combat sports analyst with a 70% winning record, publicly tracked over 2.5 years. His subscribers are coming off their fourth profiting UFC pay-per-view in a row as Bardia hits on 4 of his premium bets. He also had Francis Ngannou to win by KO inside 2 rounds. Vicente Luque and Tyron Woodley. He had Luque to not go to a decision, so he won there. Sean O'Malley to win by KO and Omar Morales to win over Shane Young. So obviously, he hit all those bets on the head. Bardia doesn't just pick fights out of the blue. He gives you an analysis to back up his picks. Now,
it should be pointed out that we did not hit any of those picks. So you should be listening to Bardia and not the Believe You Me podcast.
Bardia can fuck off being a smart ass. That's all I'm saying. Okay. But here's how he breaks it down real quick. It's a little long winded, but it's actually interesting. So he said, Francis Ngannou has the scariest one punch power known to mankind, but there are still a lot of unanswered questions regarding his overall MMA game. If we were to only look at his matchup for skill, Miocic wins in pretty much every category. However, If we take into account the intangibles as well as what the past few years have looked like for both fighters, everything starts to get more interesting. Ngannou holds the advantage in power, explosiveness, and maybe even speed. The stats and footage also seem to point to Ngannou having the better chin, as he's never been knocked out or even dropped. This is ultimately what I see being the biggest factor on fight night. Since the first fight in which Ngannou inflicted some serious damage to Miocic in round one, Stipe has racked up a lot of miles on his chin and his body. He was knocked out by DC in their first meeting, and he absorbed 162 strikes to the head in the second meeting. Keep in mind, Cormier was 40 years old, 5'10 at best, and with a reach of 72 inches. If DC can fight Stipe's chin, then a faster, more explosive Francis at 34 years old and 6'4" with an 83-inch reach will find Stipe's chin. Man, I feel stupid.
Where was Bardia last week?
To make matters worse, for me, Stipe dealt with a few injuries in the last few years, and Ngannou, on the other hand, has barely accrued octagon time as he's made short work of his previous four opponents. Of course, Miocic has beaten Ngannou once before, so it's not like he can't do it again. So anyway, there you go. There's a little bit of how he kind of breaks it down.
Very smart.
Actually, yeah, it's very, very smart. And as we know, and as he said at the top of this ad read, he's four picks at the weekend. They all came incorrect, Lewis. Now, if you want to tell the people, how could they get involved on some of this action?
I'll tell you right now, it's very, very easy. If you like to bet on fights, if you've been thinking about betting on fights, and if you need help picking winners, visit PremierFightPicks.com and subscribe. That's Premier, P-R-E-M-I-E-R, FightPicks.com. And with the return of Bellator this week and a loaded 2021 UFC calendar in front of us, it is a perfect time to sign up. Bardia is offering a special weekly subscription for only $49.99, which gets you all of his bets and analysis for up to three events. Bardia also gives you free fight picks on Instagram, so follow him at Premier Fight Picks and go check him out right now.
Let's move on. Co-main event, Tyron Woodley, Vicente Luque. Man, my heart goes out for Tyron Woodley. It really does. I did not enjoy seeing that on Saturday night. I felt I was crushed for him. I really did. You know, Tyron could be his own worst enemy at times. You know, sometimes he's gone against the grain of the UFC and things like that. Not always the smartest thing to do. He'd lost three in a row. We know that. We don't even need to go through the names. Everybody knows the story. But you got to respect Tyron. You know how hard it is to step back in the octagon again when the whole world is talking shit about you, saying, ah, oh, this guy, he's done, he's washed up. And he went out there, and the one that he didn't win, but one thing he did do, he fucking went for it. He tried. Mm-hmm. He didn't fight like he used to fight. And that's partly why he lost, because he was in such a high-pressure situation, you know, and he knew his back against the wall, literally and figuratively, normally when he fights. But he's got his back against the wall. He's maybe fighting for his job. Whole world's talking shit. He's had one of the biggest falls from grace the company's ever seen. It's like, fuck, I've got to fight. I'm going to fucking do it. And when the referee says go, I'm going to swing. So that's what he did. But that was to his detriment, because he was just going out there and swinging with reckless abandon. You can't do that. You can't, you've got to set the shots up. You can't just swing for the fences. I mean, granted, a couple of those punches nearly found the mark, and the power that was being generated, if they landed flush, might have knocked out Vicente. But that last shot, right before Tyron got rocked, that came from Woodley, again, swinging with bad intentions, a wild uppercut with no defense, his chin kind of exposed, didn't set it up at all, and boom. It was a picture-perfect little right hand from Vicente Luque, right on the jaw. And you saw Woodley wobble. Yeah. And this, again, God bless the man. You know, he didn't stop fighting. He had to grab the fence at 1 minute to keep himself on the feet. Yeah. And he was still fighting back. And
he threw a net. I think it was an overhand right, or he came back at him after he was rocked. Really exciting. They ended up winning fight of the night, $50,000 each, which was incredible. You know, but you said this on the show last week. You were like, look, Tyron's got to go for it either way. Like, no matter what way you want to slice this, his job's on the line, obviously. Do you think that Tyron had done enough in that fight? And the stoppage ended up being, I think it was not a Darce choke.
It was a Darce choke.
Okay, it was a Darce choke, yeah. But it was really the combo that set him up. He got rocked really bad standing.
And you know what? It's just quickly kind of ironic, isn't it? Because that's exactly what he did to Darren Till. Rocked him with the right hand, some ground and pound, and then got him with the Darce choke. And it was kind of, you know, it was a similar scenario. But sorry, go on. You were going to say.
Well, so do you think that Tyron Woodley, being, you know, former champion, but yet four losses in a row now, do you think that he did enough with that performance of the night performance to save his job and maybe have another look with the UFC? Not saying that you think he should be cut. I'm saying from a factual perspective, do you think that he did enough that that may be able to save his job?
Well, here's the thing, and I never knew this coming into this, but I watched the post-fight press conference, or I saw some highlights, one or the other, and they asked Dana about it, and it was the last fight on his contract. I never knew that, you know? Oh. So, yeah, it was the last fight on his contract. He didn't win. Often when people do that, when they take that last fight, often a lot of times the UFC don't want you to take that last fight, but if you want to, if you want to gamble on yourself, you can, but they offer, you know, it's business. They'll offer you an amount. You lose that fight, then the next offer is going to be a bit lower. It's just the way the business world works. He went out there, last fight on his contract. He lost. He got stopped in the second round. And I think when a journalist asked Dana, his response, I think he said it without saying it. He said, how old is he? He's 38. He's 39 years old, something like that, you know?
Four in a row. That's what he said. Yeah, four in a row, 39 years old. You know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
And that was,
I think he was saying there, come on, his time's done. And unfortunately, that may be correct. It may be, you know, and it's sad, but Tyron, if that is the case, you know, then Tyron should still hold his head up high. He had a great career. He was the champion of the world. He defended it for the belt many times, you know. That's what you've got to focus on. If you're Tyron Woodley, of course it's sad. It is. And as I told you, Saturday night, you could ask Rebecca. I'm not just saying this. I felt for the guy because I know him. I've worked with him. You know what I mean? And I don't like to see that happen to anybody, let alone someone you know. So I felt for the guy. But he had a fucking great career. And he's still going to have a great career. He's a smart guy. He's got good looks. He's famous. He's got money in the bank, I'm sure. And he can go and be a great coach. He can go and get involved in something else. Who knows? He might become the biggest rapper on fucking planet Earth. I doubt it, but you never know. You know, yeah. He's got the work ethic. So it's a shame, but focus on the positives is what I would say.
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm a fan of Tyron Woodley. I feel like we've been critical of him on this show. And I think it's only because both of us are really big fans of his. So maybe it's the frustration that where he hasn't showed up for a few of his most recent fights. And that's, I think, started becoming the narrative on who Tyron Woodley was as a fighter. And he had that guy in him that we saw Saturday night, which is just an absolute killer with killer instincts, you know, didn't come together the way we wanted him to, you know, wanted to. But look, Tyron Woodley, you know, he's still an extremely special athlete. He's still like, he could go be Bellator champion any given Sunday. You know, he could go.
I don't know. Who's the 170 champ, Harrington? I'm sure you know. Gegard Mousasi is the 185, I believe. 170. Who's that? Patrick? Is it the Pitbull? Is he 170?
No, he's 155.
Oh, yeah. No, that's who beat Chandler. Go on, Harrington. You're looking it up. I'm not sure who the 170. Oh, is it? No, it's not by Michael Douglas Bennett Page.
Yes, Lima.
Douglas Lima. That's right. He fought. That's why I was thinking of Gegard, because he fought Gegard recently and got beat. Yeah, Douglas Lima. I mean, that's a tough fight. That's a tough fight. So I'm not sure about that. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. But yeah, listen, I think for Tyron Woodley, continuing his fight career, if I mean, far be it from me to speak for him, but if the UFC have parted ways, if he wants to continue fighting, of course, that's his right, and he can be successful in other organizations. But the reality is, there's a reason why he's losing those fights. You know, you know what I mean? And you've got to look at yourself and think, why are those reasons? Because if you're not honest with yourself and you go out there and you fight for other organizations, are you going to get knocked out more? Are you going to take more injuries? You know, because there's real consequences to this shit. You know, it's all well and good. Oh, no one's died in the octagon. True. But you can't just keep going out there and being a punch bag for people. You know what I mean? And he doesn't want that. You know what I mean? He doesn't want to just be a journeyman now that's floating around regional circuits, making, you know, decent paychecks here and there for fighting people we've never heard of. That's not what anybody wants. Of course, if you're broke enough, you'll do that. But I doubt that's in Tyron's immediate goals.
Well, I wonder how much it does. Like, I guess it depends on the fight, right? But it does have to genuinely take years off your life. Like, we talked last week about Francis Ngannou having the punching power of a Ford Escort. You know, we made some jokes about it or whatever, which is a stupid thing. But regardless, he does have a tremendous amount of power. And if you get into a fight with this man and your body is going to be beaten, bruised, battered, you're going to go to the hospital, you're going to have internal bleeding. There's going to be, it's like, how much does that overall take off your body and how much is it worth it? You know, especially with somebody.
I'm still dealing with it today. Look at this. I've got a scar on my neck. I've got fake knees. I've got one eye. My back hurts. I had neck surgery. My neck is still killing. I'm going to have to go back and see the doctor. My neck is still agony.
If the doctor did that to me and it didn't fix it, I would kill my doctor.
I listen, fair play. Yeah, I'm not slandering my doctor here.
Or threatening him.
Yeah, or threatening him. Yeah, exactly. No, but I did say that because I've had surgeries in the past for things and the problem was never fixed. Knees, the knees, I'd have surgery and need another one and another one and another one until I got them fucking replaced. And then the pain finally went away. But that was an extreme fix. So I said to my neck doctor, I said, oh, it's definitely going to go, right? It's definitely going to go. And he was very, very confident. So normally the pain was always on the left, the right side. Now it's on the left.
Oh, but I think moved it.
It's just muscular, I think, though. I think it's because the compensation of the muscles and things like that. Who knows? Maybe some good massage. But anyway, can't go on about my injuries or your little boo-boos.
You have too many muscles. That's probably the problem, is you're too muscular.
Just too muscular. I mean, people say it a lot these days, you know? I mean, what are you going to do?
Look, Tyron is substantially better looking than you, and you have a television and movie career. So I think that we need
to be serious, bro.
Tyron is an Adonis, okay? Maybe the acting path. I mean, he's got a podcast too. How's the podcast?
Does he have the Morning Wood Show? I don't think he does that anymore. I'm not sure. I don't know. I hope he does. No, listen, Tyron knows the sport. He can replicate exactly what I did. You know, it just takes a bit of work ethic. You know what I mean? You've got to go for it. You've got to rebuild yourself. There's many opportunities for Tyron. I don't think, or listen, I don't know. Who knows? Maybe he comes to a new deal with the UFC. Maybe he can sit down and this would be the hard part for him, accepting the smaller purses. Because remember, I was meant to fight, and then, you know, obviously I wasn't the champ anymore. I wasn't the flavor of the month, so I wasn't getting the same purses. And I was like, well, fuck this then, I'm out. Do you know what I mean? And fair enough, because that is business. You know, your value has dropped. You know what I'm saying? You're not the champ, you know, so that's the way it goes.
And it's business on your end as well. You're looking at it as like, I know what my worth is. I know what, how much it costs to you know, what my time is worth. It's not just the fight, but obviously, and putting your body on the line, but the time away from your family, the training camp, what it does, the physical and mental toll that takes on you, you know, it's a lot. So, you know, that also makes sense if you say, hey, look, it's just not worth it. I would rather fucking, you know, do the things that make me happy and not kill myself to make money.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying for Tyron. You know, maybe he does still want to fight, and maybe he can sit down at the negotiation table. And I don't know what his purse is, so I'm just talking about the scenario here, you know. But think about it. If you've got somebody under contract and they were a champion and then they lose four in a row like that, it's only, you know, I'm not being a pro UFC guy and I'm not being anti Tyron Woodley at the negotiating table either. But it's the crux of the matter. You lost four. We're not going to pay you as much. Your brand value has dropped. Okay. And are you still willing to take this offer? Maybe the UFC don't make an offer. Maybe Tyron's not interested in an offer. Who knows? Only they know that situation. But whatever happens for Tyron Woodley, I wish you the best. I really do. Maybe we can get him on the podcast and we'll talk. He's a great guy. He's got a lot going for him. Like you said, he's got a tremendous amount of this. This is a realization I had kind of recently. I'm like, because all right, I retired 39 and that was my life. And then when I'm done, I'm like, all right, well, it's okay. I've got some things going. I got the podcast. I got some bit of commentary and I got a few little businesses here and there. I'm like, all right, cool. And then I was like, no, fuck that. I'm still in my 30s or now I'm in my 40s. I'm still fucking going. This is 2.0. I did the fight thing. Now I'm going to do another thing. I don't exactly know what it is, but be a success in other fucking ways. Just because the fight career is done doesn't mean you step off the gas and just live off your fucking little investments here and there and just be a fat bastard fighter. No.
That
you know
sounds
what I
like
mean?
A dream, the way you describe that.
Yeah, no, I've got dreams. I'm still ambitious. There's things I'm going to fucking do. Do you know what
I
mean?
No, I'm talking about being a fat bastard who lives off your investments.
It sounds great. I could do that. I don't want to do that, though. It sounds boring as fuck. I had this conversation with a director once. I'm like, you know, I've made some money. I could go fucking lie on a beach for the rest of my life. Granted, it'd be a shitty fucking beach somewhere in deep, darkest Mexico, but I could do it. And he said, yeah, but would you want to? I said, no, I wouldn't. I wouldn't. Anyway.
I can never not imagine not working. I can never imagine not getting up, making, I work 7 days a week. It's nonstop. It's not like I have my day off where I relax. I'm always working. My phone's always on. There's always something going on. And you become addicted to it. That habit, it almost becomes like, you know, a pattern in life. If you go to, you've been to therapy, so you know, but like, there's always these like patterns you have in life. And that's one of the good patterns that I have, is I've always just sort of been addicted to work ever since I was a little kid.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I'm the same way, 7 days a week. But, you know, what you got to realize is, though, we're lucky. A lot of people listening to this aren't in the same position that we have careers. You know, there's jobs and there's careers, and they're two very different things. I don't think I'd feel quite the same way about wanting to work if I was still working down the factory and clocking in every fucking morning. I'd be like, the moment I can stop doing this shit, I'm fucking done with it. And give me my pension and I'll sit on my ass and be very happy. But when it's different, when you're working for yourself and it's a career and you're doing interesting things and exciting things and the money's good as well, obviously, it feels a little different and it's way more rewarding.
But it's a hack, and it's a hack expression, you know, do what you love and the money will follow. Yeah, but yeah. I believe that so wholeheartedly. It's like, you know, nobody, when you started training martial arts, you had no idea there was money at the end of the path. You know, that wasn't even a thought. You were doing it to compete, to see how good you can get, to challenge yourself. Same thing when I started in comedy. I couldn't even give myself advice. If I can go back in time and be like, hey, this would make it easier, I don't even know. Like, it's just about like ebb and flow and figuring it out as you go along. And there's no real true easy path to any of it. So yeah, I mean, this is why it's, because people are like, oh, this guy's talking about working, he does fucking podcasts. It's like, well, no. It is the years and years of not making any money and fucking being broke, not knowing how I'm going to pay my rent, living on friends' couches, to figure it out, to get myself to a place where I can finally buy a nice car or live in a nice house. People that are, you know, that are 23 years old, they're buying a nice car, they graduate college, they're putting a down payment on a house. I'm 38 years old and I'm just doing this stuff now. But the reason it's impressive, I think, is because I'm doing something that a very small percentage of the people in the world would even try. And that's the same thing for you. It takes a lot of balls to risk it all, and you don't know that you're going to have any success.
No, of course. And that's why with fighters, a lot of the time, there is no plan B. There is no plan B. And it's there. Who was it? Was it Gary V or Grant Cardone? One of these fucking, you know, Grant Cardone is this obnoxious billionaire. He's all over Instagram. He's always talking about fucking investments, man, how to make real fucking money and blah, 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 blah. And he is obnoxious and he is annoying, but he makes some really good points, you know. But anyway, what was my point? Jesus Christ, mine went blank. Find something you love and it won't feel like work. That wasn't my point, Tyron Woodley. I don't know. I lost it. We're going to move on. Francis fucking Ngannou, how about the champ? No, what was it? No. For people sitting at home, you know, of course, you know, might be listening to this and going, well, you fucking assholes, but everyone's good at something. And I always say this, figure out what it is that you can do and then think about how far that can take you. And that's what I did with MMA. I sat down, I was like, what is my skill? I'm like, well, my skill's fucking fighting. I know that when I was 20, I mean, I've got different skills now that I've accumulated through my fight career and being exposed to TV and stuff. Sorry, I'm not talking about myself. I'm trying to give a little inspiration. But you've got to sit down, figure out what your skills are, just like you did, Lewis. Almost called you Lucas, weird, and figure out where that can take you.
It's not
and
casting then, a fishing rod, I'll tell you that
and,
much.
And then figure out the building blocks. You know, how do you start off? And it's going to suck in the beginning. There's going to be no fucking money because guess what? You're a nobody. Just like people that first signed to the UFC aren't making tons of money because you've just got your foot in the door. And if you prove yourself in any fucking job, any environment, the cream will rise to the top and you'll make some money.
I completely agree, my friend.
This lecture was brought to you by Luke Rockhold. Conceive, believe, achieve.
That's a new segment we have, the Luke Rockhold Conceive, Believe, Achieve Braveheart speech.
There we go. You can take my soul, but you can't take my freedom, or something like that.
I think that was Shrek.
Absolutely. Absolutely,
donkey.
I did like Shrek. Eddie Murphy's character was better. All right.
I watched Eddie Murphy Delirious with James. Side note, you have to fast forward through shit because Lucas is young, just like James. There's certain shit is just crazy, like dirty.
That's clearly obvious. I know. I haven't seen that in years and years and years. But Eddie fucking Murphy, man, he's talking shit. How's the laugh? What's the laugh he used to do?
Oh, that was bad.
Yeah, you don't need a parenting of the year award to realize don't let a 10-year-old or 7-year-old, 8-year-old watch Eddie Murphy Delirious.
Yeah, but dude, go put on the just the Aunt Bunny Uncle Gus bit for Lucas. He will shit his pants. It's so fucking funny. If you don't mind him hearing the F word, which you don't, but you're fucking Bisping. I've heard you around your kids.
He hears it from me. No, but just incidentally, on that note, and I always apologize when I swear in front of my kids.
Me too.
But this is how we raise our children, though. Because you cannot shelter your child from certain words. If they turn on the TV, they're going to hear them. He's on YouTube, and I hear some bad words on there sometimes, you know. They're going to hear it. Don't tell me, as he's almost 11 years old, kids in the playground are going to use it, but you have to be intelligent enough and raise them in a way where, yes, they know those words exist, but they choose not to use them. Or if they do, use them in private and not in front of me, certainly not in front of your fucking mom. Simple as that. You know?
No, of course. Exactly. And it's because my son, he's asked sometimes why he can't say certain words. And I just, it's very simple. It's like, because you don't have to. There's other words to use. And that's coming from me, who I curse like an animal. And then his reaction to that is, well, but Dad, but you use those words. And I say, I also drink and drive a car. Not at the same time.
And you can't do that.
You can't do either one of those.
You've done it at the same time. It's very lecherous of you though, Lewis. Remember that one? Lecherous, a word you didn't know. Yeah.
Infuriating that that's a word.
It's a word. You're becoming very lecherous on this podcast, as am I. All right, let's take a second to hear from Paleo Valley, specifically the Paleo Valley beef steaks. Now listen, snacks such as beef jerky is an essential part of the low, hard, high-fat diet. I've switched over from those gas station snacks that contain mechanically separated chicken parts, sounds gross, to Paleo Valley beef steaks. Paleo Valley steaks contain 100% grass-fed and finished beef from American farmers who practice rotational grazing. Now, why is grass-fed beef so important? Well, 100% grass-fed beef contains more calcium, magnesium, potassium, zinc, phosphorus, beta-carotene, and iron than grain-fed beef. It also has higher levels of B vitamins, specifically thiamine, B, riboflavin, B2, as well as the fat-soluble vitamins A, D, E, K. These fat-soluble vitamins enhance mineral and protein absorption and are believed to protect against cardiovascular disease. Now, okay, that's all well and good. It's very scientific, and it is good for you. Also, the gas station jerky contains all kinds of nonsense, hormones, MSG, bromated vegetable oil. That was originally a flame retardant. So lots of shit that you don't want to put in your body. And more importantly, for you guys, when you taste it, you can taste the difference. You can taste that this is real beef. It ain't no bullshit from the gas station. It's good stuff. It tastes delicious. It's good for your body. It's got all those vitamins. Lewis, what more do people want?
I mean, I'll tell you right now, look, you turn into Dr. Bisping for 1 second there, and you're talking about beta-carotene and this and that and the other and vitamins and this. Look, we all know it's really healthy. It's really good for you. It's all natural. But all the bullshit aside, here, you want to know why people give a shit? It tastes better than all the other beef jerky out there.
Yes.
You grab that shit in a bag. It's chewy. It tastes plasticky. You can taste the chemicals. It doesn't taste good, okay? Like, this is just for anybody. You want it to taste better. It is a better way to get it. It's also delivered right to your door. You're not going and getting just the regular run-over-the-mill beef jerky at the gas station or 7-Eleven. This is really great stuff, and it's very convenient.
Great healthy snacks on the go. Convenient health snack, even when not on the go. Great health snacks for kids. Probiotics aid in digestion and gut health are just a few more of the points that I wanted to tell you about. End of the day, stop buying bullshit. You got the choice. You got good stuff, and you got bad stuff. I don't know. Call me a scientist, but I go for the good stuff. And if you also want to go for the good stuff, go to paleovalley.com, enter the promo code BELIEVE15. That is BELIEVE15 for 15% off your first order. Paleo Valley, P-A-L-E-O, valley.com, BELIEVE15, 15% off. Beef sticks for days all over the place at a price that you cannot believe. Anyway, all right, let's get into
main
it.
Event.
Main event. Saturday night belonged to one man and one man only. Of course, I'm talking about the new heavyweight champion of the world, Francis the Predator Ngannou. I mean, my word. Now, looking back, and I said it before, looking back, and I said it on ESPN, it's so foolish to pick against him. Why on earth would I expect Stipe Miocic to beat him? Well, of course, I thought he'd be fitter. I thought he'd have the takedown advantage and all these type of things. But when you saw them side by side on the scale on Friday, and when they weighed in, it was alarming how much bigger Francis was. Now, factor in another 3 years, all the wrestling and things that they've done. Yeah, it seems crazy to go against Ngannou, but
it was sort of, I mean, look, we both picked Stipe to win this fight, and look, I think the X factor is how much better Francis looked, because he looked way better than he's ever looked. He looked more explosive. He looked like a wrestler. His wrestling looked legitimately really, really good, and he looked more athletic than he's ever looked before. On top of the knockout power and the crazy explosiveness that he possesses in his strikes, he also just added to his arsenal, and Stipe was Stipe. It wasn't like Stipe didn't show up to fight. It wasn't like, you know, I think Ngannou looked like by far the best version we've ever seen of him.
Oh, absolutely. That's without question. But what I liked about Ngannou, of course, the explosiveness, the power, that's always been there. But what we saw, which we hadn't seen before, let's remember his last fight against Rozenstruik, 20 seconds. Junior Dos Santos, about a minute. You know, all these guys, he just plows through them. As soon as the referee says fight, he goes like a psycho. On this occasion, he took his time. He was very mature. He stalked his prey. He cut off the octagon perfectly, and he was taking his time. Now, that was for a variety of reasons. One, he didn't want to shoot it and be taken down. Two, he didn't want to empty his gas tank too quickly. And three, he knew he was up against a serious opponent where he couldn't get away with that. But with that more measured, controlled approach, it made him so much more dangerous. And of course, we saw Stipe go in for that single leg, right? And he sprawled. And you want to talk about the punching power of a Ford Escort hitting his face? I times that by five, the sprawling power, right? Because he goes in for the single leg and he's sprawling back. And what you've got to do is you got to break that grip. Once you break the grip, you haven't got hold of the leg anymore. And Francis's hips sprawling back like that is 20 times more powerful than a Ford Escort going 17,000 miles an hour or whatever the stupid quote was.
It was like a Nissan Xterra going in reverse.
It was like fucking SpaceX blasting off and you're trying to hold. Stipe's trying to blast off. You know what I mean? Yeah. Stipe's trying to hang on and Francis is blasting off. What am I saying? Anyway, so he sprawls, he breaks the grip, he takes the back very nicely and he started pounding him. And you got to give it to Stipe. The man's so fucking tough, because even though those punches from the tersal position weren't, you know, traditionally aren't the most powerful, when it's Francis Ngannou, they're shattering blows, the power that that man possesses. And he landed a lot. And Stipe worked his way up to his feet and he took more and more and more. And I was like, it's done. It's over. Oh my God. Oh my God. But Stipe fought through it. But you could see the look in his eyes. You could see that he was hurt. You could see that he was dazed, but he still continued in the fight, you know, and I was so impressed with him. But again, Ngannou then just reset, took his time, didn't go crazy, didn't go right in a blaze of glory and trying to kill the guy, just took his time. Stipe did a good job of dancing around the octagon a little bit, kind of avoiding the fight, letting the clock burn down. And I thought that's what he was going to do in the second round. Again, he was moving left and right a lot. Stipe was cutting off the cage very well. And I thought, I know what Stipe is doing here. He's just trying to drag the fight out to the third round. Even if the second round is going to be a snooze fest, right? It's still a good strategy. Just because it doesn't matter if you're engaging in a full-on firefight or just like playing around or whatever. With the nerves and the anxiety and the tension and the situation and the movement that you still got to do, he's still going to get tired. And the more you can make that big, fucking, massive, gigantic man go longer, he's going to get tired and that's going to tip into the balance of Stipe. Anyway, I forget the exact process, but they were engaging in some blows and boom, Stipe hit him with that right hand. And that was the worst thing Stipe could have done, because it did wobble Francis. Francis did kind of stop in his tracks and it wobbled him momentarily, only for a split second. But Stipe saw that and he thought, oh, I've got him. And he rushed in, boom, left hook. And that was it. It was done.
Brutal. Yeah. And I mean that hammer fist was, I mean, a thing of nightmares.
Faster, please. But he's going to die.
I mean, look, Ngannou has that power that's just like truly like scary each and every time. And I mean, he has probably the craziest highlight reel of knockouts of anybody. It was sad to see Stipe lose that way. Logic would tell you that they're 1-1, that they're going to probably meet again in a rubber match, especially considering the fact that Stipe is the most decorated UFC heavyweight champion of all time, right?
Well, let's get to that in a second, because there's still some more points about the fight that I want to talk about. Namely, and this is another thing that, you know, in my defense, I never knew until Friday. When he got on the scales, Stipe was so much lighter. He came in at the same weight, I think, for the third DC fight, which was 12 or 13 pounds lighter than the first Francis Ngannou fight. And that's going to affect you. When you come in light like that, it affects your ability to take a shot. It affects your power. It affects your strength. And of course, if you take someone down, which is what the game plan was for Stipe, granted, it never came into effect because he never completed a takedown. But if you take someone down like that, you want to hold them down. And the heavier you are will be a factor. If you're light, Stipe can just, Ngannou can just throw you off. He came in so much lighter. I think what he thought there was, I'm never going to meet Ngannou for power, right? But I can beat him in speed and technique. So therefore, if I get a little lighter and I took the shots well against DC and I was able to out-wrestle DC, you know, in that fight. So he thought, I'm going to come in here nice and light, fast, light lightning, and I'll beat him to the punch, you know? And I think that was not the only reason, because you can't take away from what Francis did, but it was a little bit of a factor as well. I do firmly believe that. Do you know who I think should have got a performance of the night bonus as well?
Who?
The hair gel that fucking Stipe Miocic uses.
His hair looked great after the fight.
No, ting! He's got to stop doing that. The last fight against DC as well, he put the hat on backwards and he takes it off and the hair is sticking up. I mean, that shit has got some serious hold. All I could think about was something about Mary and what's that? Hair gel? You know what I mean? You know the scene I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah.
Where
he puts cum in her hair.
His tournament needs to take some water and just flatten down the fucking hair.
Especially if he's knocked out. He doesn't have to see you do it. Just do it while he's on the ground.
Fucking hell, is that like, listen, Stipe, I know you're knocked out, son, but to save you from any further embarrassment, I'm just going to fucking put a little bit of water there because you're looking, it's not a good look. No, I'm not making fun of Stipe, of course, having a little bit of fun about his hair. In fact, Stipe came out with a statement today. As we know, Stipe Miocic, all class, the man's still a fireman. How can you not love Stipe? I don't believe we're going to see a rubber match. I think we should. I said that Saturday night. But there's big opportunities for Francis Ngannou. But before we do that, I'm just going to read out the statement of Stipe Miocic because it's beautiful. I mean, talk about a class act. Let me adjust my contact lens so I can read it. He says, first and foremost, I'm okay. I know that fall wasn't my most graceful fall, but I was unconscious. So it happens. Laughing emoji. To my family, friends, and fans, especially Croatia and Cleveland, I love you and I'm sorry. I hate letting you down. To my team, thank you. I know you feel every loss just as much as I do. When we win as a family, we lose as a family. Losses aren't fun. They always sting for a while. But that's the beast of this business. You can't win them all, and it's important to understand that losing is just as much a part of sports and life as winning. Don't ever forget, God will always put you where you were meant to be at that exact moment. You can't dwell on what you should have done better. You can learn and improve from it and come back more prepared next time. Unfortunately, I deviated from the game plan. I felt great coming into the second. I saw it was beginning to go as planned. He was getting very winded, and I came in overzealous and unprotected. I wasn't in a good posture to take the hit. He saw the opening and did what any great fighter would have done. That was my error that I accept. It won't happen again. Lastly, I'd like to congratulate Francis Ngannou and his team on a well-earned victory Saturday night. It was your night. Enjoy your victory. For now, I'm going to go enjoy the downtime, spend some time with my family, and welcome our son into the world this summer. Stay tuned. God bless.
Very classy. Very classy. Love Stipe. We'll have him back on the show, obviously, after
he was
the wounds heal. And, you know, what does Stipe do? You know, it is a sad thing to see because I really like Stipe. It's very similar to Blachowicz, very similar to Michael Bisping, where it's a guy who just it's a guy who works hard. It's not like anything was gifted to this guy. Mm-hmm. This guy is still, like, you know, very much a hard worker. He had some tough losses early in his UFC career. It wasn't like he was this undefeated, like God gifted ability where it all just went right for him. You know, he had some tough losses and he had to learn from those losses. So I like a guy like that. You know, not only that, you guys all have the same face. It's very strange. You, Blachowicz, and Stipe should be fucking.
Kind of
do. You're like Russian egg dolls of each other. Like, each one's a little bit bigger than the next one.
My dad was in the army and he traveled a lot, so I think he was banging a lot of women. Nice one, Dad.
I think that Stipe absolutely deserves an immediate rematch. Should he want one? Maybe he doesn't want one. I don't want one if I'm him. Fuck that.
Bob, that is right. listen, he said he's going to take the summer off, and he should do, right? Last word on Stipe, because I do want to focus on Ngannou and talk about the greatness of him and the massive star that he's going to become and how he is now, you know, on top of the world. For Stipe, yeah, listen, I mean, he could retire now. You know, because he will go down. I mean, we don't know Francis's reign, how long that will be. I think it's going to be a long time. But as of right now, Stipe was the greatest heavyweight to grace the octagon. He's earned a lot of money, right? He had those three wars with, Daniel Cormier. This fight at the weekend, I don't know any pay-per-view numbers, but I would assume they were very, very healthy. You know, I would be surprised if Stipe didn't have $10 million in his bank account. You know what I'm saying? So he doesn't need to fight. He lives in Cleveland. He's a humble guy. He's still working as a fireman, you know? And if he was to retire, it would be the last fight didn't go his way. But man, what a career. What an incredible career. But of course, he's a fighter, so he probably won't. And as a guy who's 1-1 with the guy, you probably want to get that rubber match. Okay, talking of rubber matches, we'll get to that in a second. But Francis Ngannou. Right, here's a guy 10 years ago was working in the sand mines in Cameroon. Working in the sand, I don't even know what you do in a sand mine. Well, I'm assuming you mine sand, you dig sand essentially.
I don't know, but I want him. I know I want him on my team.
Fucking right, you do not want to go.
He's digging a lot of fucking sand, doggy. I mean, he's doing like three guys' work over here.
Yeah, yeah, no, for sure. You know, you can fucking just be smoking cigarettes all day. The boss thinks you're working just as hard because you got Ngannou. Do you know what I mean? Fucking sand digging for days, right. 10 years ago, he was working in the sand mines of Cameroon. Then he escapes there. He gets to France. He's sleeping in his car, in a car park, you know. And now here he is a few years.
Once again.
It ain't no Ford Escort, okay?
No, dude, it's a fucking...
He's curled up in the back. And when he yawns, he puts his fist through the windows, okay? Now he's the champion of the world. I mean, talk about that for inspiration. I mean, do we have the video actually on Saturday night, the people in Cameroon just going absolutely crazy when Ngannou won? I know you put it in the notes, Harrington. If you can find that, Brian, or Harrington, send it to Brian.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, Saturday night when he won, or Sunday morning when he won their time, just going absolutely crazy. And it's so beautiful to see because, you know, for somebody like Ngannou, who comes from Cameroon, I'm assuming most of the people are poor there. I don't know much about it, but one would assume, right? They all supported him. They weren't jealous. They weren't being haters. You know what I'm saying? Because they see... as one of their own, reaching the absolute pinnacle of sports. Press play.
Look at one white guy just in the middle. where the fuck did he come from? He's like, oh, shit, I bet on Stipe.
Yeah, if you bet on Stipe in that crowd, you're fucked. No, listen, they're all celebrating. There's beers flying around. Definitely look like Saturday night, by the way. But, yeah, that's beautiful to see. And let's just talk about the potential that Francis Ngannou has, right? Because we haven't seen a guy like this since Mike Tyson, right? Nobody. Listen, DC was a great champion. Right, Randy Couture was a great champion, but they weren't going out there and starching people with one fucking shot. Mm. And when you do that, the world watches. Look at Mike Tyson, look at the money he earned. Okay, he got a little bit crazy and went off the deep end and did some questionable things, but still, you can't deny the star that this man was. He was one of the most, and still is probably, one of the most famous men on the planet. It's Mike fucking Tyson. And that's what the UFC has now on their hands. Can you imagine if the champion, he's going out there and he's just destroying everybody? That guy is must-see TV, and anyone who's even half a combat sports fan, right, he's going to cross over. Not in the way Conor McGregor did, because Conor's got all that charisma, but he is going to be known as truly the baddest man on the planet.
I mean, well, he truly is the baddest man on the planet. Fuck all the pound-for-pound rankings and all that other stuff. He can beat up probably any man alive, right? And, you know, he deserves everything that's coming to him. The crossover appeal that Conor has, no, I mean, it's lightning in a bottle. It's a very different thing.
Very different scenario.
You know, the silver tongue, you know, he had a way with words, a way of doing things. you know, Ngannou speaks directly with his performances and how, you know, it is, it's, you're watching greatness. You're watching like a once in a lifetime athlete, right? And I think that that will take him very, very far. The only problem with this whole, you know, glory plan and path to, you know, to, you know, greatness is that it is mixed martial arts. Everybody has their day. Everybody loses. Everybody gets knocked out. Everybody gets submitted. There's no, I mean, it's very rare that people retire undefeated. This is why Khabib is such a special athlete. It's why John Jones is such a special athlete. It's because those guys are truly unbeaten. So I would love to sit here and say, you know, Francis is going to take over the world, but
you
he's
wanna,
also.
You want to make a bet?
What? That he'll never get beaten?
I say that in the next, unless he fights Stipe again, because you never know, forgetting about Stipe, who the fuck is going to beat him? Harrington, bring up the rankings on screen. Let's take a look at the heavyweight rankings. Look, I didn't mean to cut you off there.
No, it's okay.
I was like, do you want to make a bet? Because you're like, oh, you're leaning towards Ngannou getting beat. I'm saying I'm betting the house. I've got thousands of records over there. I'll sell them today and I'll put it all on Ngannou. In any fight, any situation.
You know what? Everybody has their day where
really?
They lose.
Really? I never knew that. I wasn't raised on that basis, on that belief. My mum never said, there's always a bigger, badder, tougher man around the corner, Michael. You got to be careful, right? There's always somebody that's going to put you in your place. Right? I was raised on that. But yeah.
But there's truly not a bigger, badder man around the corner from Francis.
There isn't. Francis, you bad wee bastard. You know, there's always someone bigger and better around the corner. And he's like, no, Kathleen, there is not nobody bigger or better than me. One punch, I knock you out. Well, let's look at this. Okay.
You keep turning
one is,
corner. Try to find him.
Oh, you. There literally is no one bigger. Right, so the only interesting, I mean, Curtis Blaydes could be interesting, right?
Derek Lewis is interesting. The rematch, the first time they fought sucked, but look, Derek Lewis can knock anybody in the world out as well. I'm not saying that Francis will get knocked out by one of these guys. I'm just saying that there's this weird built-in X factor with mixed martial arts that nobody can really get too big. You know, it's not Mike Tyson was bigger than the sport of boxing. And the reason that it hasn't really happened the same way with MMA, number one, the UFC does a brilliant job at marketing themselves and creating a brand out of the UFC, specifically Ultimate Fighting. But number two, it's sort of the sport is set up to where like the guys don't go on 50-0 runs. It just doesn't happen. It's very, very rare.
Yeah, no, and that's the sport. But looking at those matchups there, I mean, Curtis Blaydes has lost to him twice, as Harrington put in there, but we're dealing with a better Curtis Blaydes these days. Derrick Lewis would be an interesting fight, obviously, because they had that first fight and Derrick Lewis beat him, right? But I'd favor Ngannou in the rematch. No disrespect to Derrick Lewis, but he's one man that could match him for power, for sure. But then outside of that, who else you got? Now, of course, the big talk is, and we're going to get into this now, I guess, is John Jones, right? John Jones is waiting in the wings. The talk has always been that when John Jones comes up to heavyweight, his first fight, guaranteed, will be for a title. And that's the situation we're in now. Saturday night at the post-fight press conference. In fact, Harrington, if you've got any clips, that'd be good to they'd be good to play. But if not, don't worry about it. But because John Jones tweeted out, in fact, he's been tweeting a lot lately. He was tweeting, show me the money, first of all. And then Dana said, well, you know, anytime someone says, show me the money, it means he doesn't want to fight. Chael Sonnen on ESPN also said, but yeah, not that one. We'll get to that in a minute. But Chael Sonnen said this on ESPN. He said, anytime I don't agree with Chael, and John Jones came after Chael as well. And I thought he was coming after me. I wasn't sure. I'm like, hold on, me and Jones are cool. But Chael said, anytime a fighter says, show me the money, and doesn't say, okay, doesn't just tweet, okay, I accept, give me a time and a place. Anytime someone says, show me the money, they're stalling and they don't want to take the fight. No, I don't necessarily agree with that. And then Dana kind of, you know, alluded to what Chael was saying as well. And we're in this weird sticking point, because even though Jones was guaranteed the heavyweight shot, I think, I'm not saying he's pricing himself out of the market, but he wants fucking mega bucks for this fight. And I don't know where they're up to. And then, of course, bring that up again one more time today. I didn't know this. I was working out. And then my manager sent me this. Yeah, he says, please just cut me already. Hold on, I feel like my wings are being clipped. I swear the UFC industry has been nothing but depressing for me. You would rather have me around and treat me like shit. Oh, there's more. Just fucking let me go. What type of weird shit is this? Obviously, the boss hates me. Let me take my business elsewhere. I'm not trying to be great for other people anymore. I'm trying to be great for myself. There's nothing great about being taken advantage of.
I mean, John, we started praising John Jones so much recently on this show, but it's like, why now? Why after Francis wins? Why weren't you saying this fucking a month ago before you were teasing this move up to heavyweight? Why have you been doing videos teasing you fighting? Why now?
That's a good point. That's a good point. Bizarre. You know what, Lewis? I understand what Jones is saying. You know, he wants more money. And of course, going up to fucking fight Francis Ngannou, mate, I don't know what his deal is. So I don't know any of that history. So I can't speak to that. But he wants more money. And after Francis Ngannou, what he did Saturday night, come on. John Jones versus Francis Ngannou, that's going to be a big fight, right? And he wants what he feels he's worth. He wants his worth. Now, I don't know if he gets his worth. I don't know that. Maybe he does, maybe he doesn't, but he wants more money. So Dana's like, well, hold on. He's got a good fucking deal already, you know? So he doesn't want the fight. Maybe that's true. Maybe he doesn't get much money and he wants more, right? Conor McGregor fights, gets paid a lot. He probably wants Conor type of money. I don't know if he does or doesn't. Maybe he's on $5 million a fight. I'm sure DC said that once to me, that he's on $5 million per fight. $5 million is good money.
Yeah, that's really good money. Yeah. I mean, look, John Jones probably makes more money than 99.9% of the mixed martial artists in the world. You have every right to name your price. We said that earlier, right? Every right. God bless you. I'm just saying it's annoying as a fan where you're talking about this move to heavyweight, you're teasing it for months, you're showing all these dumb videos, and then when it's time to fucking make the fight, now you're like, oh, show me the money, pay me what I'm worth. Dana White, I mean, that post-press conference had some great little moments where he's like, look, if I'm John Jones, I want to move to 185 pounds right now, right? If I'm John Jones, I don't want this fight. It's just... You know, and Dana White even said it. He was like, dude, whoever it was, I forget the name that he said, but he was like, make the phone call. Pick up the phone right now. The fight's going to be made. If you want this fight, pick up the phone and call us, and the fight will be made if you want it. Do you want it? And he sort of threw the volley over to John Jones. And now John, I hate to say it because he is great, and it sounds like I'm a fat guy on a couch, but he's coming off like a little bitch. He's coming off like a little bitch right now. I don't know what else to say.
Headline, Luis J. Gomez, John Jones is my little bitch.
No,
listen. You know,
you get what I'm saying.
No. Of course I do. I do. And actually, that's a really good point. I never looked at it from that perspective where you're right. He was talking about it. He was all excited for it. He was talking about coming up. He is putting training footage out there. It was never a discussion. I'm fighting for the belt next. And then you're right. When Francis goes out and does that, now it changes to show me the money. And you know, okay, devil's advocate, right? On Jones' side, he could say, well, no, what I'm saying is, yeah, I want the fight. Show me the money because this is going to be a big fight. But he never came out and said that. In fact, now he's asking to be let go from the organization. What do you make of that?
It's just a kid taking his ball and going home, which, by the way, this is also the whole public negotiation thing. You have to take it all with a grain of salt. Everything that Dana White is doing with John Jones is very deliberate. You know, him saying that he wouldn't take the fight of him, he wouldn't move to 185. That's just him mentioning Derek Lewis being next in line. That is all deliberate public negotiations. Now, there's public negotiations, which is what John Jones does. And who am I to say? He's very successful, so maybe this stuff will work. And then there's also the behind the closed doors where the managers and agents are all getting in a room and they're making this work. So this is all just sort of the tip of the iceberg on what's really going on behind closed doors. More than likely, if I had to guess, if I'm going to predict things, John Jones will fight next for the heavyweight title of the world.
I think so too as well. I mean, this is all just posturing from both sides. I mean, because for the UFC, they can't be seen to just roll over and have fighters make demands, right? That doesn't set a good precedent, okay? And again, I'll say this because a lot of people call me a shill. You can't operate a business like that. You can't have 500 highly volatile fighters that are literally fighters. That's what they do. Yeah. They're fucking fighters. So if they think they can get some more money, they'll fight for that tooth and nail. That's why we do this. And if you set a precedent where if someone throws the toys out the pram and says, that's it, well, I quit, I retire, and they go, all right, well, how's an extra million sound, right? That doesn't set a good precedent. You can't be bullied in negotiations like that. Also, for John Jones, of course, he wants to get his worth as well, and to your point, they probably will meet somewhere in the middle. I certainly hope so, right? I'm really excited to see John Jones in there at heavyweight. I want to see him fight Francis Ngannou. I don't think it'd be a good night at the office for him. I honestly don't see a way. I'm going off topic here, but I would, let's do that. John Jones can't match him for punching power. That's
no,
a fact.
No.
Right? Cannot. In fact, most of the physical attributes, other than probably conditioning, he can't compete with Francis. But he does have experience, and he is a master of strategy and game plans. He always has been. John Jones has always came with fantastic game plans. And to beat somebody like Francis, you fucking need a good game plan. You need to be smart. You need to outthink him. You know, you can't go in there and fight brawn against brawn. It's got to be brains against brawn. You need a bit of brawn. You got no brawn, you got no chance.
You're fucked.
You
know,
you're fucked. You got no bronze. I don't know what bronze are. If you got no cojones, you got no fucking chance. Simple as that. But if you had a little sprinkle, a little fairy dust, a little fight IQ, then you know the odds get a little better.
Brawn, a little brain.
Which would little you rather have?
I got very little of either, so I got to be honest with you. Just give me something, please. Yeah, yeah. Give me something.
Something, please. Oh, my God.
John, I mean, John, look, I want to see John Jones fight Francis Ngannou, right? I want to see this.
Yeah.
John Jones, he wants to be shown the money. Guess what? Go beat Francis Ngannou. You'll go way further than Conor McGregor, way further than Brock Lesnar, way further than anybody else in the sport, way further than Khabib. In terms of, I mean, you end up becoming, in my opinion, the number one pound-for-pound fighter in the world. You beat Francis Ngannou, you move up to heavyweight, you beat Francis, you take down the fucking beast. You're a guy who cleared out 205, and now you are the kingpin of the heavyweight division. The heavyweight division is something that they haven't been able to create a marquee star out of really ever in the history of the sport. You know, back in the day when it was like Tim Sylvia and Andrei Arlovsky, it wasn't like those were never the guys who people really gave a fuck that much about. Even with Miocic, who we love and we're big fans of, he just didn't have that same sort of drawing power. John Jones, with the heavyweight strap around his waist as the baddest man on the planet, that gives him so much value, and he will go down in history as the greatest fighter of all time, and that will give him more money, more fame, more accolades. It will do more for his legacy than anything else that he's done, and I think that's where his mind should be, because the money is just a byproduct of that journey and that success. The money will definitely 100% be there. The problem is beating Francis Ngannou.
No, that is the problem. And just to play devil's advocate on John Jones's side, you know, he's done that. He's got the accolades. He's broken the records. He's defended the belt more times than anyone, I would assume. I don't know if that's true, but I'd be very surprised if that wasn't the case, right? So all that there's left now for Jones is financial reward. You understand what I'm saying? Because, you know, you go out there as a fighter, you want to prove yourself, you want to show I'm the bad man, I want to win the championship, I want to defend the belt. He's done that. He's done it and again and again and again. He's taken out generations of fighters. Realistically, now for Jones, I mean, I was talking about Stipe having a lot of money. You know, I'm sure John Jones has got a lot more. You know what I mean? He's been the champion pretty much for as long as anyone can fucking remember. Do you know what I mean? What year was it? 11? 2011? Something like that. He's pretty much been the champion of the world at UFC light heavyweight division for about 10 years, right? He's earned phenomenal amounts of money, but more importantly, he's got the respect and he's got the things that money can't buy. So now the only reason for him to keep going in there is for phenomenal paychecks. You know what I'm saying? So that's why, and again, I don't know anything of the situation, but for Jones, that's all he wants. He wants these big, big paydays. And of course, for the UFC, they're happy to pay him big paydays, but you know, there's got to be a middle ground. You know what I'm saying?
Of course.
UFC do pay big money. If you're one of the stars, if you're one of the guys, you're going to make good money. I made great money when I was fighting, and I'm not a John Jones. I'm not a Khabib. I'm not a George St. Pierre, but still, I'm still living off my money from my fight career now. You know what I'm saying? So the money's there. How much Jones wants, is he living in reality or is he in crazy world? Is he talking $20, $30 million? You know what I mean? Because that's not going to happen. 5-10, maybe. I don't know. I'm not involved. It's above my pay grade, but you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, of course. And look, he has every right, and I agree with him. John Jones is worth a lot of money, right? And he's worth a lot of money to the UFC. But there's a number, obviously, they're going to pay you it or not pay you it, right? And you have to sort of look in the mirror and go like, well, what am I really worth? They're the number one promotion in town. They're the guys who have built this sport into what it is today. So you have to, that's data that you have to look at and go, well, that's valuable data. If the number one guys in town who really know what the fuck they're doing, the guys who actually built my career for me, or in conjunction with myself building my career, if they think I'm worth this much, that data should be valuable to you to a certain degree. What I'm saying about him having the accolades, it's not so much has he done enough to earn the respect and this, that, the other. Yes, of course. I'm talking about pure pay-per-view dollars. If he wants to become like a Floyd Money Mayweather, can sell 3-4 million pay-per-views, which is that type of power is really where the money becomes unlimited, become the heavyweight champion of the world. He will do that. John Jones right now, it's not that he does very well with pay-per-views, but he's not doing what Conor did. He's not doing millions and millions of pay-per-views each time.
No.
So I think he has the path to do that by becoming heavyweight champion of the world.
And that's probably something to do with it as well, right? The fact that Conor's made so much money and Conor's floating about on a fucking massive yacht and Conor's, you know what I'm saying? Right? But the Conor's been very smart. You can hate on him, you can love him, whatever. You can't deny the man has been a fantastic businessman. He's used his platform better than anybody could have ever dreamed of. And he proclaims to be a billionaire. He very may well be one. Fact is, he's fucking loaded, right? And I think for Jones, and again, I'm assuming, so this isn't coming from anywhere, but it's only natural as a human being, right? You're John Jones. Because if you look at Jones, anytime people talk about Khabib being the greatest of all time, he's on fucking Twitter and he's defending and he's talking shit. And then who was it just fought recently? And again, they were talking about how great he was. And he was like, you lot must have forgot about me. What are you talking about? Right. So he's very, very defensive. You know what I mean? And he feels like he's always having to justify himself, which he shouldn't do, by the way. So, but if he's looking or maybe hearing rumors, because people talk and it's not always truths that get told in these little conversations, people exaggerate, you know, or you know. In England, you call it Chinese whispers. I fucking dare say that anymore. Do you know what I mean? But what do you call it here? You say one thing to someone, they say it to someone else. Before you know it, you got paid 5 million.
Telephone. It's a game of telephone.
Telephone, you call it. England, we call it Chinese whispers. Stop the Asian hate. I do say that, but that's what they call it.
I love how you just throw it, stop the Asian hate, in the middle of your Chinese
I agree. But you know what I mean? Hey, listen, I don't want to get fucking canceled. When I was a kid at school, they called it Chinese whispers. That's all. And maybe, who knows? You know, maybe the number that got back to Jones is $30 million. And he's like, well, fuck that. That's what I want. So then therefore UFC are like, you're crazy. What are you talking about? And as you said, to your point, the reality is, even though he's been so great and he's been such a dominant champion for so long, his pay-per-views don't generate those kind of numbers. So then when he sees Khabib on several million guaranteed plus pay-per-view, and he's not getting that, I don't know if he does or doesn't, but let's just assume he's not, then again, that's going to wind him up. Do you know what I mean? At the end of the day, he's going to set out his stall. The UFC obviously are already saying no. Do you know what I mean? So what do you want to do? And he's asking to be let go by the company. They're never going to do that. You're under contract. Why are they going to let him go fight for somebody else? That just doesn't make sense.
And I mean, look, we've seen John Jones be suspended a couple times. We've seen him now take off. He relinquished his 205-pound title. He's stepped away from the sport. The sport has survived. It's been fine without him.
Yeah, in fact, actually, if you just reminded me of something there. If you look at Chael Sonnen's Twitter, because you just mentioned that Jones, unfortunately, had these skirmishes with the law, shall we say. And that reminded me of this tweet from Chael, because I told you, John Jones tweeted out, if you are a former fighter and you think that I'm scared, then shame on you, or something like that. I forget the exact tweet, but I have Chael's response here. And he says, if you are a former fighter who can't pick a weight class or an opponent with multiple arrests and failed drug tests, you are the problem personified. So, Chael and Jones going back and forth there. But I'm saying, to your point, that kind of is a point as well, you know, because Jones has been out of the octagon for a while through poor decision-making.
The UFC has done a great job. I touched on this a little bit earlier at sort of building the brand of the UFC. And whether Conor comes or goes, Brock, Ronda, anybody, John Jones, it really doesn't matter. You know, they can't put all their eggs in one basket. And this is one of the problems with boxing, is like you had a few stars and that was it. And those stars were bigger than the sport of boxing. So the UFC, they have a lot of power in the negotiating process, right? And I also think that the UFC, they're really great. They're really great at specifically doing this. So I think that they probably will come to terms and we'll see this fight happen. I will tell you right now, I don't necessarily agree that it's going to be a short night at the office for John Jones if he fights Francis Ngannou. You know, he talked about that on Twitter that night. He was like, look, I've moved out of the way of way faster punches. You know, I've been, you know, I have a lot more experience. So the fact that I think that's a really interesting fight, And who, another X factor is how well Jon Jones will move at heavyweight. I watched those videos again that we kind of touched on because they were a little bit grainy. You think he was slow?
I thought the extra weight. Well, listen, it goes without saying. That is a fact. If you get heavier and bigger, you will move slower. Okay, granted, if you put on like the proper muscle and it's fast twitch fiber, you know, then okay, that'll generate speed. But if you're also putting on fat along with it, yeah, you're gonna be a little bit slower. Just in the same way, if you get lighter, okay, you got to do it right. Can't be skinny fat, you know what I mean? But if you're lighter and athletic, you're gonna be faster than what you were if you were heavier and athletic. You know what I mean? It just goes with it. And maybe, who knows? Maybe that'll be to his detriment. Just because someone puts on weight and goes up a weight class doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be a better version of themselves. Yeah. It is a good fight. And I just want to say this as well. Jon Jones isn't scared. Listen, he stepped in the octagon. He's fought the best fighters in the world for 10 years in a row. Title defense after title defense. He's not scared. But, you know, it is... I want to choose the right words. I was going to say a worrying prospect. I don't know if that's the right way of putting it. It's a daunting fight. It's a real fucking fight. This isn't him going in there. And no disrespect to Thiago Santos or Dominic Reyes or anyone like that. They were great fights, tough fights that he won, though. But this is a different kettle of fish altogether. This is literally stepping in there at a weight class that you're not really accustomed to, that you've never fought at before, against a person that pretty much everyone's fucking terrified of, because he can turn people's lights out just like that. He made short work of the greatest heavyweight champion of all time. It's a daunting prospect. And so for him, I understand what he's saying. For him to put all of his reputation on the line, which is what he's doing, because he's allowing Ngannou to become an even bigger star by beating the great Jon Jones, the only man to do it. He's like, well, if I'm going to put that on the table, then I want to put it up against some real money. Now, I'm sure there is real money, but he wants more. Right, that's up to him and the UFC to sort out. But us, as fans, outside of the situation, it's a little frustrating because I just want to see the fucking fight.
Yeah, he's directly referenced Deontay Wilder, who got $10 million guaranteed for his rematch with Fury. And then also Harrington put in these little side notes, he says that he's been asking for more money for the Ngannou fight for months. Harrington, explain that. What are we missing here?
Nah, it's okay. Let's not go into it because Harrington doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about anyway.
Go fuck yourself, Harrington.
And no, but you know what I mean? It's not for us to break down negotiations too much. You know what I mean? I work for the fucking UFC. Let's be honest. You know what I mean? Okay, here. I'm going to give you all the trade secrets. No, listen, we've talked about it for long enough. That's my point. You know what I mean? So listen, I think it will happen. I think there will be some common ground found. Of course, Jones is fires. He's volatile. You know, he has a temper. He feels he's being disrespected, all the rest of it. On the flip side, UFC are like, well, fuck him. We're not just going to have you make demands, you know. But I think eventually, hopefully I'm being optimistic, it will figure itself out. Yeah.
Yeah. I hope so. We'll see what happens. All right, real quick, Mike, we must thank Blue Chew for supporting today's show. We do love our Blue Chew. I am a Blue Chew through and through supporter. I will always use Blue Chew for the rest of my life. If you don't know what it is, it helps you have just a better time in the bedroom. It gives you a fuller, stronger erection, to be scientific about it. It really does work. It's chewable. It gets into your bloodstream faster. It's actually made with the same active ingredients as Viagra or Cialis. These are very known drugs that help with this, but now it's done in a much more convenient way. Because Mike, I know, look, you're a very proud man. You don't want to go have to have a weird conversation with your doctor and say, hey, look, doc, I need a little bit of help in the bedroom. That's not the way a UFC champion treats his life. The way they do this is you do it online. You have a physician online. You fill out a little questionnaire. They give you your prescription right there. And then they send it to your door in discreet packaging. So nobody's got to know.
Nobody has to know. Nobody should know. What goes on in my bedroom is very, very private. I went to the doctor once. I started telling it, the problems, the issues, the scenario, if you will. And he gave me a funny look. So I clocked the guy. I just gave him a little crack. I walked out of there. And still to this day, Rebecca is not satisfied. But still, then we discover Blue Chew. Baby boy, we're having more kids. You know what I'm saying? We're nonstop these days. Listen, the process is simple. All you got to do, sign up at BlueChew.com. Consult with one of their licensed medical providers. And once you're approved, which you will be, you'll receive the prescription within days. The best part, as I say, all done online. Blue Chew's licensed and medical providers work with you to find the right ingredient and strength for your prescription. Oh, by the way, you don't like swallowing pills? No worry, because Blue Chew's Sildenafil and Tadalafil, I don't know how you produce that, pronounce that, they're tablets which are chewable. Blue Chew's tablets are also made in the USA, and you can take them on a full or an empty stomach. So listen, what more do you want, okay? Fulfill your partner, fulfill yourself, have a great time. Chew it, do it, go crazy. Lewis, tell them about the offer.
Right now, go to BlueChew.com, BlueChew.com, and when you check out, use the promo code BELIEVE. What is that going to do? It's going to get you a free trial of Blue Chew. Holy shit, I know. I know your penis just woke up. A free trial of Blue Chew. All you got to do is pay $5 shipping. BlueChew.com. Use that promo code BELIEVE. Go grab yourself some boner pills. See how it works for you. All right. Let me do plugs real quick.
Yes.
We'll reset. We'll get a couple more things in here. We got a little bit of time left here. You love the show. Go to our iTunes. Leave us a 5-star rating, positive review. We love the reviews. We really do appreciate them. Also, you guys can subscribe directly on YouTube. If you guys do that, hit the notification button and you'll get a notification every time another episode drops live. Typically, that is Mondays and Thursdays around midnight Eastern time. Also, if you guys want to subscribe to the entire on-demand library, all ad-free, uncensored, and in one place, go to gasdigitalnetwork.com, use the promo code BYM. You get a 14-day free trial. You get access to everything, all the shows that we've ever done, all in one place. And I got a couple more live dates coming up. Next month, I'll be in Florida, the 15th through the 18th, Port St. Lucie, Boca Raton, Tampa, Florida. Go to lewisofskanks.com if you guys want to get some tickets in Bisping. And we can't officially announce anything yet, but I was going to say,
for those, I will be bringing my one-man show on tour to the UK and Ireland later this year, and Lewis will be coming with me. Lewis will be lathering up the crowd with a little stand-up set beforehand and then walking me through it and holding my hand as we do it.
It's a one-man show, but it's really a two-man show.
Yeah. but we could make it one-man show, but it'd just be better. It'd be funnier. So October, there are the dates that are yet to be announced officially, but this is it's a big production at some big venues, some big theaters, like 3,500 people.
Well, really? Right? That many?
Dude, trust me. Trust me. It's big. This is through like legit outlets. This is not no fucking Tom, Dick and Harry bullshit.
Good.
There's guaranteed money on the table as well, so that's good. But yeah, October, early October, keep an eye on.
Can we give some hints at some of these cities, maybe?
London, Manchester, Glasgow and Dublin. London, Manchester, Glasgow and Dublin coming your way. The one-man show. Lewis J. Gomez will be there. You'll open up the crowd. We'll have another local comedian on as well. And we're going to rock your world. And who knows? Maybe fucking Mikey B spins a set at the after party at the nightclub close by. Bam, 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 bam. But yeah, that's
I've never been to the UK in my entire life. I'm very excited.
What is one thing, if you went to, like, in your mind right now, what do you think, like, give me your biggest preconceived idea and something that you feel that you have to do when you go to England?
When I go to England, something that I have to do, I think of London like New York. So just, yeah. I imagine there's going to be good food, good bars, cool people, trendy places to go, cool places to hang out. But really, when I think of the other places we're going, I'm like, I'm going to have a real hard time finding good food.
A lot of pasty
white people with weird, questionable spots on their lips.
There's going to be weird, pasty white people. That's for sure. Right. But London is like New York. London's awesome. London's better than New York. You're going to see London and you're going to go, whoa, it's like New York, but with loads of class and really ancient historic buildings that you just don't see in America. The food's fantastic. You know, people talk shit about the food in England, which is crazy, but it's a massive melting pot, just like New York is. So you got everything in London. But yeah, Manchester, again, you get good food in Manchester. Obviously, you go out the city center and you'll be screwed. You won't have a clue what's going on. There'll be Cornish pasties and sausage rolls, and you're like, what is this shit? But they are good. Glasgow, again, we're getting a bit more in the sticks. Dublin's awesome. We'll have a good time in Temple Bar in Dublin. That's a fun place. You'll enjoy it, Lewis. And then I'll try and show you like some of the more country bits, if you will. Maybe I'll bring you to Clitheroe to meet my mom. We'll do a podcast.
I would love to meet your mom in Clitheroe. That'd be awesome. We'll find some sheep. We'll fuck them.
We'll go do a podcast at the top of the castle. I'll tell you a few stories up there. So check that out. But yeah, London, London, Manchester, Glasgow, and Dublin coming later this year. I'm very excited about that. All I've got to do though is write the fucking show. You know what I mean? Because
well, we have the bones.
I have the template, but what I'm doing this time is I'm bringing a lot of multimedia, like we did last time. But I've got a lot of good ideas. I'm going to write it down. When I talk about this bit, you bring this up behind me, and I've got some very, very, very funny anecdotes throughout my fight career. We had that little test one in Toronto. People loved it. It was very, very funny. But I told some guy about it, and he's came back with a really, really good offer, and it's a great tour. And then from there. Worldwide, baby. Domination. Let's go. Netflix special. Bow, 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 bow.
Let's go.
Do we have any questions, Brian? We got a lot more things to talk about, but we're running out of time here. Obviously, we've got Jake Paul and Ben Askren. They had their press conference, if you can call it that, at the weekend or last week. That was funny. But we'll get into all of that and the other stuff on Thursday's show. Brian. Do we have any questions?
So I got a message on Instagram from OG Lord Cool. And he's asking, what do you guys think about the 265 weight cap on heavyweight? And would you like to see that get lifted?
Interesting. Yeah, because why is there a weight cap? You know what I'm saying? If you can still, I'm sure there is a scientific reason for it, but I don't really have an issue with it. There's never something that that's really bothered me. What I would like to see is a cruiserweight division added. You have that in boxing. You know, I forget what the light heavyweight limit is, but then you've got cruiserweight. You know, I would like to see a 220-pound division added to the UFC or mixed martial arts, not the UFC, 220. So then everyone at light heavyweight can move up to 220, right? And then after that, you got your heavyweights. Add another weight class in. I think that would be really good for the sport. Yeah, Lewis?
The problem is there's just, you know, it's not like there's all these 300-pound, crazy, talented, fast, athletic guys, you know?
Correct.
You know, I think it's fine. Look, would I like to see one day a super heavyweight division? Maybe. Why not? I always thought that there should be a super heavyweight MMA organization that specializes in just guys over 265. I think there's a market for it. Big, crazy, tough, you know, guys that can knock each other out. But I think that the UFC, the weight limits sort of make sense right now, especially at 265 pounds for heavyweight. They could do a cruiserweight division. We've talked about that plenty of times, but
I think the issue is having these gargantuan-sized men is that it starts to get in the realm of freak shows. You know what I'm saying? Like Pride back in the day. And it was great. You had Zulozinho and some of these, Bob Sapp, of course. You know, you had these tremendous, gigantic men throwing down. The skill sets were never too good. The gas tanks were never too good. And before you know it, if someone doesn't get finished, you got two guys rolling around on the floor that don't really know how to fight. They're just fucking gigantic. Right. Mm. And then also, I think another problem that you're going to have is the same problem. What's that? Aki Bono. Yeah, exactly. The same, you're going to have the same problem as the women's 145 division. You're not really going to have a division. You're going to have a few people that want to do it that are that size. You know, they're not run of the mill people that size, you know, certainly run people that size that want to do mixed martial arts. Again, even fewer, just like 145 pound ladies that want to compete in the octagon. And even though it's still there and Amanda Nunes is very happy about that because she's fucking cleaning up two weight divisions now. There's not really too much talent there. And that's just simply because ladies that size who can fight well, that aren't too frequent. And the same thing with guys that weigh 300 fucking pounds, you know, let's be honest. Ngannou came in pretty much the same weight on both fights with Stipe. Why was that? Because he cut weight to make 265. So even if you're 280, you can do your 15-pound fucking weight cut. So I don't really think the problem is having, you know, a super heavyweight division.
Yeah. And somebody like Ngannou stands out as being a freak show, athletic, 280-pound man who has to cut down to 260 pounds. That's the exception. It's not the rule.
Yeah, yeah. Alfie, shut up!
No, he agrees.
I think we got a little delivery. Okay, we got anything else, Brian?
No, that was it for today.
All right. I went to the BYM Pod Twitter page. Follow it, by the way, at BYM Pod. And I did do this. I said, oh, any questions? The problem is there's like 237. You know what I mean? It's just too many. It's too mind-boggling. I appreciate the support. Pump Alexander Romanov. I want to see some heavyweights Khabib-like smash. Okay, all right. Not even a question. Will Callum eventually spar Lewis at some point? Yes.
You think so?
We talked about this earlier off air. Hopefully, Brian Harrington and Lewis are going to come down to SoCal soon. We're going to do some podcasts with Chito Vera and Jason Perillo in person. We're going to do a round table. In fact, we'll do that. We'll do a round table. I'll get a few fighters and we'll sit around. That'd be great. Probably go into absolute madness. And maybe we get Callum down to put you in your fucking place. Maybe we'll do that.
Bisbee, can I take my problem? Let's just say.
I'm joking. No. I know what you're going to say, but go on, say it. Go on.
Let's just say, hypothetically speaking, I do get the better of your son in a boxing sparring match. I don't believe that you have the ability to not put the gloves on and beat the shit out of me right afterwards.
I do have that ability because I'm not a moron. I've been around plenty of sparring situations my entire life, ever since I was 8 years old, and I've never, ever once reacted in a negative way to anything that happens on the mat. And if he wants to step in there and do it, great. And if you want to step in there and do it, great. He wrestled yesterday in a tournament and he took out and pinned the number one guy at like 220 pounds, right? All he does is work out 2-3 times a day.
Are we wrestling?
We'll do MMA. Let's go.
No, we're not doing MMA. We're going to do boxing.
This is an MMA podcast. If you want to do just boxing, fine. Fine. Trust me. Listen, you're right. It's like Jake Paul and Ben Askren. Okay. Yeah. We're going to get into all that Thursday. You know, Jake, I hate to say it. Jake Paul's going to kick his ass.
You think so?
Yeah.
Save it for Thursday, dude. Because I think Jake's wrong.
I hope I'm wrong.
Will you put money? We'll do one-on-one. I don't need odds.
Because Dana White, dollars down like Dana White.
Well, Dana White talked all that shit, and then they called him on it, and he was like, why would I do that? There's odds on it. I will give you even odds. I'll give you even odds.
I will put the money on Ben Askren. Bet. You to me. You know what I mean? We'll call it $100, whatever you want to do, right? And whoever wins, winner takes all. Well, winner pays the other guy.
$500.
Maybe I'm underestimating Ben, and I'm overestimating Jake Paul. I haven't seen Jake Paul, but I have seen him hit the pads, and I have seen Zab Judah talk about him, and of course Zab Judah's training him, so he is going to big up his protege, right? But I've also seen Ben Askren, and once you take away this is why you want to fight Callum in a...
I don't want to fight Callum.
All right, no, but listen, just let me finish the point. You want to compete against Callum with the wrestling taken away. Right?
Yes.
Right?
For sure.
Because it plays into your favor. Jake Paul is competing against Ben Askren by taking the wrestling away, right? Ben Askren said, I would do you a homicide. If I saw you down a back alley in Las Vegas, I would do a homicide on you and you couldn't stop me. I agree with that. But if you take out the wrestling, he can't do shit.
Here's what I'll say, and this is not anything new. A lot of people have broken this down this way. Ben Askren is a proven competitor, a proven fighter.
I said this.
A guy who has competed at the highest level of wrestling, highest level of mixed martial arts, jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
He is a guy who has been in deep water, who has had to dig down deep. Jake Paul is in the best case scenario. It's a big question mark surrounding Jake Paul. Now, the boxing ability, you're right. Ben Askren did not look great on the pads, but I don't think he's trying to look great on the pads. I think
he fucking should, because that is a direct reflection on how you throw punches.
I think that he is going to come in with a really smart strategy and a really smart game plan. Henry Hoof is training him for this fight, I believe. I think he's going to tire him out. He's going to bring him into deep water, and he's going to put so much pressure on him that Jake Paul's going to fucking not know what hit him. And look, he doesn't have to look pretty boxing. He's got to punch him in the face a bunch. That's all he's got to do, get punched.
Trust me. Listen, I'm all about it. And I was saying that initially. I was. And that makes sense. That isn't like an ignorant point of view that you have. You know, that makes sense. That sounds logical, right? And I said, maybe I'm underestimating Ben and overestimating Jake. I don't know why I'm overestimating Jake, because he's not a proven entity. He's not a boxer, but he is young and he has done it for a little bit. But I spoke to Jake, right? With Playline, we're doing some NFT shit. We're doing one with Jake Paul. And we spoke to him and we had a quick chat about the fight. And he said, listen, I'm expecting Ben Askren to come up and try and tie me up, right? He's going to try and get on the hooks and dirty box and all the rest of it. And he will. And Jake was right to say that, right? So he's aware of it and he's working with people that are that to counter that. Okay, it's well and good countering it. Ben's done that for fucking years, so he's going to have an advantage. One thing to remind yourself of, though, and this is nothing to do with what Jake said to me. He's not saying this. He hasn't said that. I'm saying this and I'm assuming this. It's Jake's promotion. It's Jake's fucking job or his people's job to appoint the referees. Okay, so they're going to say the moment he fucking clinches, because you're not supposed to clinch in boxing, the moment they fucking clinch, you get separated. Do you know what I mean? That, again, falls into Jake Paul. It's his show. It's his promotion. Everyone's riding the fucking gravy train for Jake Paul. Ben Askren's coming in, and if he was wrestling, he would fuck him up all day long. But it's not. It's not.
Well, that's why Ben Askren, and we're probably not even going to touch on the we've talked about it enough at this point. We're probably not even going to get into it on Thursday.
Oh, we are.
But the posture that Ben Askren had during that whole press conference, he was just like, all the confidence in the world, because at one point it was so silly. Jake Paul gets up. It's like, come on, bro, let's go right now. And so Ben's crazy. Ben's going like, wait, you don't actually, this is the show. Like, you don't actually want this. If you wanted to go right now, I would make you suck your own dick on this stage in front of everybody and nobody could stop me. That's fighting. And that's a beautiful thing about Ben, is Ben sort of has this confidence going like, well, look, this is just a silly little exhibition. The same way that I play Super Frisbee or Ultimate Frisbee, I'm using my body to do a different thing, right? So as a man, I think Ben Askren goes like, I'll destroy you in any capacity. I'll destroy you in a fight. Let me see if I can challenge myself to teach my body how to do this act better than you.
Oh, listen, I totally agree with you, Lewis, 100%. And I thought, to be honest, no disrespect to Jake Paul, but Ben owned him at that press conference. And as you said, the body language, everything, you know, Jake was a little cringe. He was trying to be like a Conor McGregor, even a Michael Bisping back in the day. And he missed the mark. He missed the mark, you know, but A for effort, but it was a little too much. But still, it'll be fun. And listen, Ben's not going to be scared. Ben's fucking been a champion of mixed martial arts for many years. You know what I mean? He's not scared at all. This is a nice payday for him. He's going to go in there. If he wins, great. If he loses, so fucking what? He's getting paid and I'm happy for the man. I really am. It's not that I'm hating on Ben Askren. I just feel that it kind of leans into Jake's favor. But still,
it's so interesting though. The fact that we're talking about it with like...
What we should do...
Go ahead.
What we should do... And I'll reach out to Perillo and I'll reach out to some other coaches and we'll get some coaches' perspectives, right, that know about this type of thing. I'll see if we get Perillo on and maybe like a Trevor Whitman or someone, you know what I'm saying?
That's
and
great.
See what they, and I'll try and line up a couple for Thursday, you know, for a quick 10, 15 minute segment, you know, that'll be interesting to get an outside perspective from an actual coach, someone involved in mixed martial arts that sees the different types. And we'll get a different perspective. Obviously, we'll get a boxing perspective from Jason. Yeah. We'll try and get a wrestling coach perspective and things like that. So maybe we'll try and do that for Thursday. In fact, we will do that Thursday. And then in the meantime, you guys, take care. Look after yourself. Thanks for tuning in. Tell your friends. Give us a 5-star review. All that good stuff. Brian Harrington, thank you very much. Lewis, you're okay as well.
Bisping, you're the man. Thank you guys very much. We'll check you on Thursday. Peace.